Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Once again, everybody, thank you for hopping on board the latest edition of Gun on One, the podcast. It is powered by Patterson Square Garden. I'm Derek Gunn. And of course, what the Eagles are doing lately is incredible. Just a month ago, we thought they were left for dead. All of a sudden, they listen to the media, they listen to the fan base. They're not only running the football, they're running with authority. And all of a sudden, Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts can do no wrong. They're the Pied Pipers of Philadelphia. Now, as for their opponent this week, the New York Giants, they have been spiraling downward all season long. A Giants faithful are screaming bloody murder. They want changes, and they got a change, which we will talk about shortly. So to talk about the Giants' perspective, I reached out to someone I've known for a few years, and I watched this man. I'm a big fan of his. I hated when he played my hometown Green Bay Packers, but that's another story in itself. This man is a Pro Bowler, all pro, two-time Super Bowl champion. He's also a member of the NFL's 1980 All-Decade team, the Giants Ring of Honor. He is currently a radio analyst for the Giants games as well. He is the one and only Carl Banks. How you doing, man? I've been trying to get you forever, man.
DJ, I am so happy to be here, man. Thank you for having me. Big fan of your work and of you personally. And then, you know, I live for your moments on the grill. You know, we watch you on social media and get our tips, man. So, and then, you know, I know we're going to talk football, but I got to tell you, one of my sons is a grill master, right?
Okay, all right.
And he travels the country for different barbecue techniques. And so we're going to go. There's a spot in Alabama that we read about that's one of the original, really number one barbecue, family-owned, been around for like 75 years. And I told him we're going to hit Alabama and do a barbecue tour this summer. So I'll let you know how that goes. I'll take some videos for you in case we have a few tips that you haven't heard of. But
yeah.
I know all your techniques are just, you're like a ninja with it. You just told me something about turkey and what you have to, what you do with a turkey. What is that technique called again when you have to slap it in?
Yeah, the technique is called spatchcock. My wife told me about it. I said, there's no such thing. I looked it up on the internet and man, people are raving about this technique in terms of cooking a turkey faster. And the meat is so juicy on it. And of course, I have my own D-gun touch to it, with the seasonings and the injections, which I will share with you off camera, but not on camera. I can't tell everybody, but I will
all
share
right,
it with
exactly.
you. But I do, man. If you're going to Alabama, are you going to Birmingham?
We're going to hit Birmingham. We got a few spots we're going to go to. I have a meat purveyor who services a lot of those restaurants, so he's going to kind of curate the tour for us, but we'll definitely be in Birmingham.
I wish I could think of the name of it, but I was down there back in 2011 when Leonard Weaver, who played for the Eagles, tore up his knee. It cost him his career. He was with the Philadelphia Eagles, and he invited me to come down to do a story on him rehabbing. And they told us about this barbecue joint in Birmingham. I got to find the name of it, and I'll text you to you when I find it. But this barbecue was phenomenal. You know me, I'm picky when it comes to my Q. Now, I love I love Kansas City barbecue. I love South Carolina barbecue with that vinegar mustard-based sauces. Yeah. But this place, it was legit. And so I will get you that name to add to your tour.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Well, obviously, we're going to talk some football here. And, of course, the Giants at three wins up and many wins down. I know New York fans are, like, pulling their hair out. And big news coming out of New York on Monday, or Tuesday, I should say, offensive coordinator Jason Garrett relieved of all of his duties. Considering the way this offense was going, did you see this coming?
Yeah, you kind of felt it, DG, because of the money they spent in free agency and then the young talent that they have. And, you know, where they were ranked last year and then this year, again, across all offensive categories, the feeling was that despite whatever's going on with the offensive line, and that's not unique to most NFL teams, a lot of teams have offensive line issues, that their talent wasn't, or their ranking wasn't reflective of the talent. And they did not believe that they should be this lackluster on offense. And, you know, when you have guys like Kenny Galladay and Kyle Rudolph, who are big factors throughout their careers in the red zone, and those guys are not even on the field, when your team gets in the red zone, it's almost tying one hand behind your back because you have guys that are proven production guys in that area, and you make it easy for defenses. So the Monday night game kind of felt after that game that they were going to make a change because it just looked so disjointed. And that's, you know, and I have a great deal of respect for Jason Garrett. I know him personally and professionally, but it just didn't work out.
Mm. It's not like Garrett didn't have weapons, but since he's been there in the season plus he's been at this team, when I did my homework on the Giants, I was shocked to find out that the Giants have scored the fewest touchdowns among any team in the National Football League. And how much were injuries a factor? Because the Giants were beat up last year. They were beat up again this year.
Well, you know, play that violin for the other 31 teams in the league.
Yeah.
You know, you got a Baltimore Ravens team who entered a game with zero running backs. Like, everybody goes down, right? And they figure out how to win. So injuries are always a factor, and we can't kid ourselves and say, you know, when your top players are out, it doesn't make a difference. But the challenge of every coaching staff is to find the things that your team does well and play to those. It's, you know, sometimes, and this is not directly at Jason Garrett, but it's across the league, you have some coaches are too smart for their own good. They want to be too gimmicky. But the things that work are the things that work, right?
Yep.
You'll see teams repeat plays. Well, this running play works. Let's keep doing it until they stop it, right? And you find out teams can't stop certain things. You just keep running it. You don't have to get too cute. You don't have to get too gimmicky. You pull the gimmicks out every once in a while, right? It can't be a part of your game plan, if you will, that you have to have a grab back play every other play. That doesn't give your team a chance to have success. Build on some things that they can do well because, you know, in the Giants case, their offensive line, they can't block certain things. They can't run certain runs. But the things that they can do, you got to build on that and you got to create a package around that. And if you don't, you're not helping yourself. And you know, when you have free agent signings and you can't find a way to get them in positions to have success to help you, help yourself, then you're not doing a service to your ball club.
Mm. A lot of people on the outside looking in want to say that the major problem with this Giants team is the offensive line and the organization's lack of commitment to build this line the right way in recent years. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, it's a valid argument.
Okay.
Sure. And they have not developed some of the players that they have. But it also, it's worth examining, DG, what can you evaluate your guys and give them things that they can do well? And I say that, and this is not a comparison between Russell Wilson and Daniel Jones, but Russell Wilson has never had a great offensive line, mm-hmm. right? But they do things around his ability and the ability of those guys up front, what they can do well, yep. right? You don't ask them to do things they can't. And you know, by doing that, you mitigate a lot of the exposure. Now, there are going to be some game situations or in-game situations mm-hmm. where they're going to be exposed. But that's, you know, maybe 5% of the plays if you can do the things well that they can do. And you're going to always stay in favorable or manageable situations. But, you know, the Giants often find themselves in these third and long situations where you know if something's going to break down on that offensive line. Mm-hmm. Give them a third and five, even a third and eight, where your quarterback has a chance to get something done and your offensive line can at least get a hand on somebody. But, you know, when it gets in those third and long situations, that there's just no shot.
Mm. Now Freddie Kitchens is taking over, and he had a good measure of success in the when he was with Cleveland. Do you expect immediate improvement in the offensive flow?
I don't know. Because you're in season, there's not a lot you can do just to overhaul a system. And plus, you have a quarterback that has kind of a understanding of the language right now. Mm-hmm. But what I would venture to say, and it's not just Freddie, because I'm not sure it's going to be 100% Freddie Kitchens designing plays. But what I would think is they're going to go back, which is something that should have been done during the bye week. Go back and look at the plays that they've had success with against teams that are a similar opponent. And I say that because, okay, if you look at what the Giants did successfully against a very disruptive defensive front in Washington, should be something that they would think about against the likes of a Fletcher Cox and company. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to put your guy, you don't want Fletcher one-on-one with any offensive lineman, especially the guards on the Giants. You've got to figure out what you did well to kind of neutralize some of the things that Washington did with their disruptive front. And then you play on that. You don't have to be in a hurry to open your formation up. Yes, you got some young, very talented wide receivers. There are different ways you can get those guys open besides just going to a 11 formation and just spreading everything out. That's just not conducive to success for you.
You were mentioning Daniel Jones just a moment ago. He's got 9 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. I'm watching him play Monday night against Tampa, and I came away asking myself, because I looked at some of the throws he missed on, and I said, is it a lack of talent or a lack of coaching or a combination of the two? How would you categorize Daniel Jones at this stage of his career?
So that's a great question. And, you know, people say, well, is he a franchise quarterback? And I'm getting to your question in a roundabout way, but what defines a franchise quarterback, right? Not all franchise quarterbacks go to Super Bowls. Not all franchise quarterbacks mm-hmm. go to NFC finals, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
But what you want is a guy who can make good decisions with the football, keep your team in the game, and win a good amount of games. So what you're asking for in terms of a franchise quarterback is a guy who is average or above average, who can play above average football on a consistent basis. And then you can kind of gauge where he is. And so I don't think Daniel Jones is a below average quarterback, but at this point, he's an average quarterback that has to play above average. That's all he needs to do. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, he gives his team an opportunity with the other phases, meaning defense and special teams, to always be in games and to win games and make the decisions with the football. So what is Daniel Jones? I think he's an average quarterback that has to play above average. Does he have above average talent? I truly believe that. But he has to play at least average. And there were some fundamental breakdowns in that Monday night game. You could tell it was starting to get to him a bit and his mechanics were off. But then again, are they giving him things that he can do that he can build consistency with throughout the course of a game?
Now, I'm not about to put words in your mouth, but it sounds to me like it's a lack of coaching up, because we always hear that when you have a quarterback. Prime example, Jalen Hurts here in Philadelphia. Nick Sirianni initially tried to make him one thing, and he wasn't comfortable in that mode. All of a sudden, against Detroit, they flipped the script. They took the ball out of his hands a lot more, and they stuck to the running game, but it made him more effective in terms of utilizing his overall athleticism. Could that be the case with Daniel Jones? They're not playing enough to his strengths.
100%. And yeah. I think you can call it coaching, you can call it schematics, but it all comes down to coaching, right? Coaches create schemes, right? Coaches have to evaluate their players. So, yes, you're not putting words in my mouth. They have to do a better job at that. And then the other thing, and to your point with Jalen Hurts, you know, not just with Nick, but the narrative was so much of what he couldn't do, right? And, you know, I don't know if Nick was trying to disprove that myth or just let the kid go out and see what he could do. And then all of a sudden, like you said, in that Detroit game, and I would say in that Atlanta game too, all of a sudden it wasn't a two-dimensional offense. It was a three-dimensional offense because you could just see the switch flip with Jalen Hurts. And he started to move like a football player, like he belonged on the field, right? All of his movements, it wasn't robotic. It wasn't, don't do this, let me think about this, let me read this. Now you cut on the film, hey, if Jalen Hurts sees man coverage and he sees a lot of the defensive players' numbers in his front view, he's taking off with it. There's nothing wrong with that because everybody's turned their backs and they're running with wide receivers. He pulls it down and runs with it, and he's a hard tackle. He's a hard player to tackle. Can he pass the football? Yeah, we see that. But he is using every tool in his toolbox, and he's making that offense better because, like you said, when they run the ball, that's one dimension. When they pass the ball, that's two dimensions. And when you have the ball in his hand, he can make great decisions. That gives a three-dimensional offense, and that's something a lot of teams don't have. And plus, down in the red area, they're one of the toughest teams to stop in the league right now because of their three dimensions.
When you played the game, when you were out there with the likes of Harry Carson, Lawrence Taylor, Gary Reasons, man, you guys were wrecking people. People feared playing that Giants defense. When you look at this current Giants defense, is it hard for you to watch sometimes?
It's getting better. It's getting better. You know, it's you have to realize too, Derek, that, you know, the era that I played, the teams I played in, the era I played on in the era that Seth Joyner played in.
Yep.
It's hard to find that. Like it's unfair to even make those comparisons, right?
Okay.
An Eagles defense, a Giants defense, even a Bears defense, right? You're living in dreamland. You got all-time greats on those teams.
Yeah.
Right. So to ask a defense to be that is you're asking way too. They're not even capable. You know what I mean? You might be able, and I'm not even. I was a huge fan, and Seth knows this, of what Buddy and those guys did in Philadelphia. You'd be hard pressed to find one guy on a team that could do what those guys did, individual, much less eight or nine of them. Right. So it's hard. Like, dominant defenses now, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, there's nobody, there's not a defense that, there may be a few, that you look at them across the board, you can pick five players that can wreck a game for you, right? Or six players that can wreck a game for you. We played in an era where every guy, 1 through 11, and then the sub players, they felt a responsibility to be disruptive because they didn't want to let the other good players down. It's a lot, it's a big difference right now. It's a totally different game. And, you know, when you can look at another team and be a fan of their players because they do it the same way you do it and you look forward to, you know, those head-to-head matchups to see whose defense played better, then you know you got something. I don't think that happens in today's NFL.
Well, now that you brought it up, let me ask it to you this way then. When you look at those dominant players you play with on that Giants defense, could they have survived and thrived in today's era of football, this pass-happy league we see now?
Well, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And you can even ask Seth this. A guy like Seth Joyner would never leave the field. We had the difference right now, Derek, and I think Ronnie Lott also addressed this too when they said with the rule changes and things like that, that's assuming we're not smart enough to adjust, right? We were not just football players. Like most of us were athletes. We did other things in football. We didn't just train in the off season, taking ropes and beating them on the ground and training one particular muscle group. We were athletes, right? Reggie White, God rest his soul, was in a dunk competition with me, right? So we were guys that did other things. We weren't just specifically football players. So we understood movements. Our bodies weren't just geared for football. So we were athletic players playing our position. So that's why we were so interchangeable across the board. Like our players, the Eagles players, you could put them anywhere. Like, and that was the beauty of it because they were so interchangeable. Now they're so one-dimensional. So yeah, we would be in this game making a hell of a lot more money.
Right.
And then we would be talking about what an all-time great should look like, what a Hall of Famer should look like. Because right now the game is so different. And I'm not upset. I mean, this is what it is, right? And greatness in this era not necessarily translate into greatness in every era, but this is what you have to judge in terms of who's good and who's not. And God bless them, right? But if you have to extract your best players in today's game and put them in another era, could they survive? And vice versa, right? That's when you can tell who all-time greats are. And there are some really good football, some really great football players playing in the league today. But there's not an abundance of those players that you can say, I think that guy could play in this era, right?
Yep.
But I can truly say that if I took a Seth Joyner or a Wilbur Marshall, they would completely dominate this era of football, completely, because they could cover. They could rush, they could blitz, they could tackle, right? There's so much that the likes of those guys could do. And, you know, even in my group, I mean, if I couldn't play a linebacker, I'd be a defensive end and get a ton of sacks in today's game. And I could be a linebacker in today's game as well because, you know, all the success these tight ends are having in the league right now, I guarantee you that would not happen if I'm on the field. I guarantee that.
When you look at the money flowing in the National Football League today, do you stop and say to yourself, man, I was born a little bit too soon. I wish I'd have been born a few years later.
Yes. Yes. And I think, in every decade that preceded us was probably saying the same thing too, because this is a lot of money for a little bit of work, man. They don't practice hard.
Nope.
And again, like I said, God bless them, because their bodies are going to thank them when their careers are over. The quality of the game sometimes goes down because I don't think some players, not all of them, I don't think some of them care enough about football to really give it their all on Sundays. You know, everything is a business decision. And again, with the rules the way they are, and look, they had that, the late Bill Walsh in San Francisco, they ran an operation like that. The Packers ran an operation like that. But those guys showed up on Sunday and they played like they wanted to reward the coaches for letting their bodies stay fresh.
Yeah.
Now it's everything is a game time decision with some guys.
Yeah, I don't have to tell you this, but the Giants, for people out there listening who don't know this, the Giants have only had one winning season and one playoff appearance since 2012. They have not gone to the playoffs since 2016. What is the fan base and the media saying up there about what's going on with this team?
Oh, it's not pretty. I mean, the fans are irate, are injustifiable. They deserve a better product than that of which they're paying to see. I think Joe Judge is the right coach for this team, but they got to get it together and they got to get it together fast and start to show some improvement. And I think one of the reasons why Jason Garrett is no longer the offensive coordinator is that they think they can do a better job in terms of getting this quarterback to play above average, getting these tools offensively that they have, the ability to make plays. I mean, when you look at this offensive, the wide receiver core, right? You've got speed, you've got experience, and you've got size in some areas. And so you've got a complete package that if you can utilize them right, your quarterback is so much better because you can look, your quarterback can look and find the mismatch. You've got, you know, guys who can burn it. You got, you know, a guy who got size and then a guy like Evan Engram, who's kind of a forgotten man, who can also create some problems, especially, you know, by personnel grouping. You know, you can create some mismatches. So, and it doesn't have to always be spread them out and let the quarterback read it. You can pack them in and still know who's got who and know where your favorable matchups are.
I know Dave Gettleman isn't a fan favorite up there right now. Why do you think he's been able to survive all this up to this point?
So Dave Gettleman knows a lot of football. He knows how to evaluate players. A lot of people thought he is out of touch. And, you know, with that job, you know, you've got to hit on some players. You've got to have something that have people talking to make you forget all the misses. And you talk to any general manager in the league, they all have more misses than they have hits. But the hits make you forget the misses, right? And that's the thing that Dave did not do early on. There were not a lot of hits and more misses. And now you got a guy like Kadarius Toney who could be a hit for you, but they're not utilizing him, right? And then you've got the free agents that he put on this roster that are not being utilized. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, what is he doing? Does he even know what he's doing? But he does. But the reality is, you know, picking players is not an exact science, and you got to have it. You got to have it right, you know. And one of the things that Dave won't get credit for is he had to clean up some stuff in the locker room to kind of clear the deck for a good foundation to be poured. And I think in doing so, he may have overcorrected where there was a single flag on a guy. Red flag, they walked away from it, you know, because of the DeAndre Bakers of the world and a few other guys that, you know, first round draft choices that you took a chance on, all of a sudden they just flamed out or got in trouble. And then other guys, you know, that were in senior leadership that were not necessarily raising the level of play of the younger player. So if they're looking at a guy who happens to be really good, right? But he's only wants to be good for himself.
Yep.
His habits don't, you know, the rising tide floats all boats, right? Well, his habits don't float them boats because this guy knows what he has to do on Sunday. But, you know, Monday through Saturday, what is he doing to get the other guy? I don't want to hear your problems. Go away. I'm worried about me, you know. Mm-hmm. And so those type of players, if those are the sole senior leadership in your locker room, though they may be good, they don't help the other players, because then the other players start to develop bad habits and they're not as good as that guy. And so the chemistry of a locker room is something that general managers also have to look at. You know, there's a dynamic in there and it's a delicate balance. So he wanted to clean that up. And then he was adverse to drafting certain players because one or two things popped up. But, you know, the DeAndre Baker thing, the fact that he survived that probably said to him, I can't take any chances. So whatever happens with Dave Gettleman, whenever he leaves the organization, he will have left it in better shape for the next guy, because the next guy is not going to have to clean up messes.
I know people don't know that you like to slip in and out of Philadelphia every now and then. I know you peek in on the Eagles occasionally. What do you think about the way they're running the football down people's throats right now? The last four games, they're averaging 217.5 yards a game rushing in a passing league.
It's impressive. But, you know, the thing about it, like I said, they are a three-dimensional offense now.
Yep.
At first, they were just a two-dimensional offense. Stop the run. Make Jalen Hurts beat you with the pass, right? Now it's run, pass, and Jalen Hurts, who can do both. And that's very impressive. And, you know, what we consider a passing league, all of a sudden, the teams that can run the ball are more in vogue, right?
Yeah.
You look at what the Patriots are doing right now, right?
True.
They're running the ball. And see, here's what happens, and I give Nick and his staff a lot of credit. They're understanding how defensive personnel makeups are, right? These guys ain't built to stop the run. These guys are built to rush the passer and to cover in man defense, right? So draft choices, training, everything they do is around a passing league and occasionally a run. So you look out on the field, and the Eagles' defense, right, on the second level was susceptible to that early on too. Mm-hmm. But that front line started to play a hell of a lot better. When they turn it on, everybody around them gets better, right? But their linebackers early on were kind of exposed. And all of a sudden, you know, when that defensive front started to play better, their fits became cleaner. They were able to make better football plays, right? And they didn't have to worry about, you know, trying to get off blocks and things like that. Their reads were more defined. And then, you know, you got one of the best corners in the world out there in Big Play Slay, so he can hold his own, and you just don't want to have to throw at him, period. Mm-hmm. Because it's not even a 50-50 proposition. It's a losing proposition when you throw it down.
I'm going to make you cringe just a little bit right now, because I'm going to give you a stat that you don't want to hear. The Eagles have won 20 of the last 25 encounters with the Giants. The Giants, as we know them right now, do they have a chance this Sunday against the Eagles?
We'll see.
That's a great politically correct answer.
Listen, no, I really don't know. The thing, you know, they play on Sunday. They're not going to cancel the game because the Giants only won 3.
Right.
So they're going to have to show up, and they're going to have to win the football game. And hats off to the Eagles, because they do have the Giants' number. It's been that way for a very long time. Even when the Giants seem to have a sure victory, the Eagles find a way to pull it out. And that's just the way the rivalry goes. But it's not cringeworthy. It's a fact. I mean, let's see it for what it is, you know.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens on Sunday. I don't know. Like, the Giants played them tough last year. They let one literally slip through their hands at the end of the game. Which should give them some reason to believe, or maybe, you know, personnel-wise, we could match up a bit. I don't know, because they're not playing well. and the Eagles are playing extremely well. So they're going to have to get a lot of things corrected with their stealth opponent before they can even, you know, think about how they're going to play against the physical opponent in Eagles.
I have just a couple of questions left to ask you before I let you go. And again, I thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Going back to when you played the game, which division opponent did you hate the most?
I think the opponent that I hated the most was Washington.
Okay.
The opponent that was the biggest challenge was the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, you look forward to playing the Eagles because they were like the ultimate challenge. And obviously, Randall Cunningham was just such a difference maker in terms of how you played the game. And, you know, I tell people all the time, there was not a single player in the NFL that kept me up at night other than Randall Cunningham.
Wow.
Because of just the things he could do. And it wasn't out of fear, but just, you know, you just stayed up thinking about all the things you would have to do to try to stop the guy. You know, and it was a fun challenge. We always look forward to playing against him and somehow trying to figure out how to stop him because he did everything. So it was the biggest challenge was always the Eagles because we had a healthy respect yet dislike for each other. But like nothing made me want to beat the Washington Redskins more. I mean, it was just. I just hated them. They were just the team that you hated.
What quarterback did you enjoy sacking the most, for whatever the reason may be? He's thinking. Oh, he's thinking about it.
No. It's an easy one, and it was Jaws.
It was Jaws.
Because Jaws couldn't get out of the way, man. Jaws was like, there were times where, you know, Jaws, when you sack Jaws, he's got limbs flying all over the place, leg one direction, arm the other. He was the guy that took the ugliest sacks, man. When he got sacked, it was just ugly. So we used to love that, but you know, once Randall took over, we had to shift our focus somewhere else. But he was the guy that you enjoyed sacking the most.
Final question to you. Every site that I've looked at through the years, and even when I researched our discussion for today, I wanted to look at who were the greatest linebacking core in the history of pro football. And the era you played in, that group you played with Lawrence and Harry and Gary, are always rated in the top five. Why did you guys complement each other so well?
I think part of it was our understanding of each other's responsibilities. One of the things that was mandatory for us under Parcells and Belichick is that we had to learn every defensive position. Like literally learn it and we have to practice it. So if there were end of game situations and I had to play cornerback or Lawrence had to play cornerback just so that we could get a jam on a wide receiver to get him out of bounds, he needed our lift, right? We had to know what was expected there. If we had to be a down lineman, we had to know not just the pass rush piece of it, but if they ran the ball, what would be our responsibility? So, yeah. And then we became so interchangeable within our linebacker ecosystem, which gave us the flexibility to bring guys in unaccounted for ways because I could line up one place and I knew where Gary Reasons had to be when the ball was snapped, if it were a pass. So I could leave my area on the line of scrimmage and get to his area with a great deal of precision so that, you know, if he blitzes and the quarterback says, okay, I'm going to send a slant right into that area, I might end up running right with that slant.
Man, I can't thank you enough for taking some time to talk to me here on Gun on One. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the one and only Carl Banks, one of the greatest linebackers ever to play the game. We thank you for hopping on board with Gun on One, man.
Thank you for having me, DG.
Absolutely. And of course, you follow him on all his social media platforms. And if you're in the New York area, listen to him as a radio analyst for all the Giants games. WFAN, correct?
That is correct.
All right.
You know, listen. Bob Papa and I.
Yep.
Bob Papa and I, my broadcast partner, we have a podcast, Papa Banks.
Oh, okay.
Podcast on. So that's also. So I tweet about that all the time as well.
Well, I'll make sure whatever you tweet, I'll retweet it for you as well, my friend.
You got it.
All right, everybody. That's going to wrap up this latest edition of Gun on One, brought to you by Patterson Square Garden. For Carl Banks, I'm Derek Gunn. Hey, thanks for listening in each and every week. And as always, tell you, stay blessed out there. But more importantly, be a blessing to each and every person you encounter. And Carl, before I forget my manners, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours as well.
To you and yours as well, DG.
All right. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Gun on One is a production of D-Gun Enterprises in Patterson Square Garden. Elvin Shabazian and Wes Pendleton are the executive producers on behalf of Patterson Square Garden. Lead producer is Derek Gunn. Associate producer is John McNeil. Sound design, mixing, and mastering by Elvin Shabazian. Original music by Weatherman. For more information about the podcast, visit gunonone.com. And please, don't forget to subscribe and give us a positive rating if you're feeling the show. Thank you.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.